Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone. I'm sorry again for the slight delay. It's just Rabbi and the Chevra. So this time, I wanted to give chabur about ona bizman hazeh, about what ona looks like in the contemporary marketplace. We don't exactly have very detailed records of what the market looked like, Bisman Mishnah and Bisman Gemara, but we have some stuff from Gemara, we have some stuff from history, and it's pretty obvious that some things have changed since Bisman Chazal and stuff like that. And so, just to highlight a couple of those potential points that could theoretically influence changes from back then to now. I guess the first is just we have more complicated business models. Nowadays you have a large variety of different types of products. So for example, if you're selling apples, you could have multiple different types of apples. Or if you have a store, you could have apples, oranges, bananas, etc. And while that probably existed in some shape or form in the time of Chazal as well. It's certainly easy to say that there are a lot more complicated, both qualitative and quantitative changes or expansions since then. The second is the service aspect. So in a very, very provincial place, so you had somebody that sold produce, they took it to the market, and that was it. They went from the kfar, maybe they sold it in the kfar, maybe they went to the krach, depending on when they would read the Megillah, I don't know. But that was pretty much the full service aspect of it, unless you imported something from overseas. So nowadays, though, there are
Recording in progress.
so nowadays, though, there are a lot more different types of services that we can offer. One is convenience. They also had quote unquote convenience stores or convenience services. By the Mikdash, they had places where you could exchange things and buy coupons for karbanos. But nowadays, we have stores that are open 24/7, that are open late at night. And so that could also factor into the premium. Additionally, we probably have more overhead. We have insurance, we have taxes, and all that. The other major factor, oh, sorry, and then one other is prestige, meaning they had different types of quality back then also, but theoretically you could be paying for something that's not even tangible, for Lamashal, a designer product or a luxury product, not necessarily because it's higher quality, but because it has a certain social status. They had that back then too, but that's something that's more ubiquitous. Another aspect is the sort of scope of the shuk. Until very recently, you had whatever radius you could walk or drive. Now online, you can buy from across the world. And so you could make the argument that the shuk, that there's a really only one shuk, across the entire world. So the question is, what does that look like? And so you have more vendors because of that. You also have different pricing structures. So aside from just the difference between a wholesaler and a retailer, if Lamashal in a restaurant, you sell steak and soup. So it's a well-known fact that they don't charge as much for a steak and compensate by raising the price on soup, because that way it encourages people to buy both. And so they'll theoretically make more money than if they would just charge really what a steak is worth and what a soup is worth. So that's also another element of it. And then finally, which I think this is a bit of a matter of debate, is the shar. So as we'll see, ona is that is overcharging the price of the shar, of what the market is. So the question is, how do you determine what a market is? So if you're living in an economy where prices are fixed, that's pretty easy. Or if prices are somewhat regulated, or if there's not so much spread in a price, that's pretty easy. But one of the basic ideas of modern economics is supply and demand, that prices are whatever people are willing to sell versus whatever people are willing to buy. And wherever they converge, that's pretty much where the price ends in the long term. So the question is, if you believe that that's the case nowadays, what does that mean, Bisman Chazal? Did that also exist? Or was there something that Chazal have another way of sort of calculating it? And then the final difference, and I don't know how much of a difference this makes, is the ease of price comparison. So the entire concept of Onah, as we'll see, is predicated on the idea that the Torah and Chazal did not expect you to have full knowledge of the market. There can be some asymmetry between the mocher and the lokeach in terms of the price of the in terms of the price of the object that you're buying. And part of the cheshbon and how long you have to claim onah is how long it takes you to go to an expert to evaluate the worth of this object. So nowadays, theoretically, it could be a lot easier to check both before and after. So whether that makes a difference or not. So these are just some theoretical differences between then and now. In terms of just a general introduction into Onah, so it comes from the Parsha in Behar, where it talks about Yovel. The Pasuk says, V'chisim kiru memkar la'misecha, kano miyad ha'misecha, al tonu ishe sachiv. So if you buy something, you should not be sone your brother. And then the Torah continues to talk about when you're selling a field for Yovel, you should charge and buy it for the price that it's worth based on the number of years left until Yovel. So one of the major observations that all the Mefarshim make is that we know Eino Nar la Karkos, and yet this is talking about Karkos. So Rashi quotes Chazal, which deal with it, and basically say that you sort of have to break up the pesukim. That the first pasuk is talking about mekach u'memkar of metaltlin of different objects, as opposed to the rest, which is talking about karka, which doesn't seem to be the pashut pshat, but that's how Chazal understand it. There are other approaches. One which was just interesting is the Chizkuni. So the Chizkuni there, he says that the Torah is talking about over there, because you can't sell property, and what you're basically selling is just the rights to plant, to harvest, to plow, and to get the peiros. And so the entire Parsha is talking about that you're getting the peiros for it. That's how the Chizkuni explains it. I don't know how many other Mefarshim understand it that way. And he says, and the reason why it's not talking about real karka is because they know the karkos. I don't know how many other Mefarshim explain it that way. The Ramban, famously in his Pirish over there, he goes through Rashi, and then he goes through how the Gemara explains it. And then in the middle, he posits his famous idea that it would even be usur by karka. So he says, V'ani choshev od svara, shavadai hama'anas chaveru ledas over belav, bein b'metaltalin bein b'karkos. So the Ramban says that if you do it intentionally, so you're over both by metaltalin and bekarkos, shebehen diber hakasav also nu ish esachiv b'mispar shanim achar hayovel. Because that's what the pasuk is talking about. Shehum mas yoshiiknu v'yimkru lefi hashanim, v'lo yonu ish esachiv. Aval, but he says, Rabbo seinu chidshu bo'na tashlumin bishtus hamekach, ubitul hamekach biyoser mishtus, chazal, formulated or innovated, depending on how you understand the lumdus of what these shiurim of a sixth are, Chazal either taiched up or were mechadesh the concept of a shtus, that if it's equal to a sixth, you have to be machzirid, and if it's more, then the entire transaction is batel. Umizeb bilvad miatu akarkos lefishono behem afilu biyaser mishtus mechila. And so the Ramban says that just like where Chazal were basically said that everybody is mochel when it's pachos mishtos, so by karka they said they're mochel even when it's more than a shtos. But nevertheless, it's still usher to do in both of those cases knowingly. And they just said that, look, people, lemaisa, are not are just mochel. They don't care about it when it's that small. So they were medayik from the pasuk that there's a unique aspect to metaltolin that's not shared by karka, i.e. hachzaras hamamon. Avalas haras halav no hegas bakulin. But the concept of halav exists by all of them. The Pnei Yoshua and Bava Metzia has a a more ambiguous formulation where he seems to say that the lav of lo sonu doesn't apply, but there's some other isser. He's just very ambiguous about it. But he basically says the same idea that theoretically, even by karka, or even if it's pachos, it would also be aser. So what the Ramban brings out is an idea that's also echoed in some shape or form by the Rush as well. So the Rush in the fourth perek of Bava Metzia. So the Rush over there also echoes the idea of the Ramban that pachos mishlus could be aser. If he is mesupik, but that's one of the tzadim. And what this highlights is the phraseology of the pasuk is not talking about a specific act per se, but it's talking about an act that results in a certain emotional or financial response. Meaning the language of the pasuk is don't steal or don't cheat or don't lie. It's don't be ma'ane, whatever ma'ane means. And as we'll see, that could theoretically explain some shitos or positions about onah, where it's not necessarily about the act, but it's about the response or result that it produces. And specifically because the Torah isn't magdir it that way. So the Rush, just since we're on the topic, might as well go through it now. So the Rush there, in I think it's Oschaf in Perek Dalet, so he goes through the suffix about whether Ona exists when it's Pachos Mishtus. So the Rush over there, he has a suffix. He says on the one hand, it could be that it's Mamish Aser. He says V'yeirah deBechol Shar Dvarim Afilu Pachos Mishtus Aser LaAnos Es Chaveirum Yesh BaShavipruta. It has to be a Shavipruta. Kevin Sheyodeh Sheimekcho Shavikolkach. So the Rush says that you could make the argument that since you know that you're being ma'ana, even though it's pachos mishtos, it's aser. The Rachman Amar al sonu b'chol davar sheyesh bo shivui mamon. The phraseology of the pasuk is just simply don't be ma'ana. Kevin sheyodeya she'ein mech, sorry, shivui mamon, his hira ha'torah shelo ya'ana es chaveiro. Ela she'amru chachamim de'ad shtos havei mechila, so he says, it's not really a lechadchila mechila. It's just that everybody just assumes that if you're going in good faith, you're willing to look the other way if somebody made a miscalculation. So people are willing to be mochel if somebody made an honest mistake. It's mashma from the Rush then that if it's not a ta'us, then I never had das to be mochel. But if one of them has an expertise knowledge of how to evaluate it, one or the other, unless they are mefarish. So the Rush over here seems to say pretty explicitly, and the Aruch HaShulchan points this out as well, that if you are mefarish, then that's okay. If you are mefarish, that's okay. And as we'll see, the Gemara itself says that if you are mefarish a tnai, that there is no ono, what the exact details of how you formulate that tnai is a machlokas, but if you do the requisite amount of transparency, then that's okay. And so you could just chalk it up to simple mechila, but I think it's more than that. I think that once again, since it's mugdar as being ma'ana, there's no inui over here. And then he says, except for matbeos. And then he has the other tzad, though. He says, Oshema kevin de derech mekach umemkar bekach lepa'amim, Halokeach chafetz b'mekach zeh u'mosif alav damim yoser michtei shavyav. So sometimes you value something more than what it's worth compared to everybody else, or what everybody else evaluates it as. U'pa'amim shehamocher mizalzel b'shumaso b'memkaru l'fish ein chafetz zeh arev alav. O shudachok limo. So either but maybe the seller has liquidity issues, or he wants to just move this merchandise, so he doesn't care about it. So Hilkach, Ad Shtus Havi Bichlal Demei HaMekach, Ve'en Kan Shum Ona Klal, V'Tzarech Iyun, and then he says, V'Yar Shemem Yatsi Yidei Chulam. So this other tzad that the Rosh says is that maybe there's nothing problematic at all, that it's a lichat, even pachos mishtus is mutter, even lichat chila. And he says the reason is because people don't always value something equivalent to the market rate. Now, that is opening up a bit of a Pandora's box because, well, if that's the case, then why should, you know, why does it have to be only a shtus? Why can't it be more than that? I value it more. And for that very reason, the Ritzvah in Kiddushin, he brings the case, I think it was Rav Chista, who was doing Pidyon HaBen, and so instead of the five slam, they give him this sudra, this like turban type thing or handkerchief, and he says Lididi Shavili, even though it's not. And so the Ritzvah there says that for Pidyon HaBen, since klape him it was worth five slam or more than five slam, that's the shavius, and so you're yotzei the mitzvah. And the Ritzvah then continues and says, "V'hu adin lo'na." If the person says, "Not mitoch dochak," which is also again an interesting thing that the Ritzvah would be maskim to that idea that it's not mitoch dochak, but generally speaking, if you just really like handkerchiefs or really like something else, even for a particular reason, so that theoretically could amp up the value. Most Rishonim and Achronim are not maskim to that. So if that's the case, and the Rush does not mention that, so if that's the case, so what's the chiluk between pachos mishtus and mishtus and more, legabe personal? You know, we have sales, right? So we have sales where people want to move the merchandise. If the store is closing down, so they'll have up to 50% off, 60% off. You see signs like that. So, you know, you could declare and have mechila, but so, you know, that's probably where that fits in. But if there's no mechila, the guy is still hard-pressed for cash, or you really, really like these things. So what's the problem with that? So Rush doesn't say this, but what I think you have to say is that there's sort of this general consensus that pachos mishtus includes all the, the range of acceptable valuations that are more or less than the standard. Meaning, I can understand that under normal circumstances, a person values something differently than somebody else does. There are different circumstances where that might come up. And so under the normal swath of circumstances, people's valuations generally fall within a sixth of the current market value. And so therefore, that spectrum basically is the market value. Yes, there is a fixed number theoretically, but it's just not, nobody's uniform. Everybody has different, you know, in economic language, different utilities, different utility value for different chafetzim, depending on their own circumstances. So that still is the shar, for lack of a better term. More than that is not the shar. It just makes you a yotzei min haklal who's under a weird set of circumstances. The Ritzvah says that's enough to define either shavius, or perhaps if you use the ona, the ino, the ona, or ma'ana perspective, that klape me, if you're not being ma'ana me, if I want that. So according to the Ritzvah, that might be enough. And even lefi the Ritzvah, if you say, if it's bidochak, meaning essentially if I'm taking advantage of you, so yes, even though you are maskim, everybody has a price, that is also considered inus. I think that it kind of explains the difference, the spectrum of opinions. But this is the suffix of the Rush. So nowadays, kind of transposing that to nowadays. So what does that look like? I'm going to go through, I guess, the extreme shitos first, and then kind of gravitate towards the middle. So the first, I guess, extreme on one end is the Shevet Halevi. So Rav Vosner in 1 second here. In Chelek Hey, I believe, Simon Reshut Zion, somewhere here. The head of you. I do not. Okay, that's weird. Thought I did. I'm sorry. Oh, here it is. Yeah. So he says, Be'inyan hafkas sha'arim velavda ona. Sorry, so this is in Chelek Dalet Simon Al. So he says, with respect to Havkash Armen Ona, Hine Litzarenu Kol Echad Rotzelis Asher Bimashu Male Hamachirim Umaana Eschaverov Over Bechol Makom Ubechol Tzad Alavda Alzona. So Rav Ozner basically doesn't mince words. He says basically everybody's usher, you know, over the isser of onah, that whenever there's a price, they just try to maximize their profit. And so what he's basically arguing is that the whole concept of supply and demand runs contrary to the Shar Bizman Chazal. Rav Ozner acknowledges the fact that it might not be, you know, considered price gouging, but if I'm charging more and people are willing to pay more, that's still theoretically onah. Why? Because the value of it is X. I'm charging more and people are willing to pay more. So even though they're willing to pay more, and that's kind of where the price settled, even long term, that's usur. And he continues and he says, I'm not sure exactly where he's writing. I guess Eretz Yisrael. Mashakosov Bitur Choshen Mishpat Simin Reish Lamed Aleph, B'Shulchan Aruch Sham Sifches, B'Medvar Mamurim Shlo Hukar Hashar, Avolam Hukar Hashar Yimkar Kfi HaYoker. So he quotes an interesting, and I didn't get up to this in my, I'm going to get to that. So I will just preface this, which I haven't gotten up to this in my primary limud. I just saw this in the tshuva, so I looked it up. So I don't know the full sugya, but I don't really understand where he's coming from. I'll just read the language of the shulchan of the tour. I think the tour is a little bit clearer, to be honest. It's Reish Lamed Aleph. So the tour says, Chayavin based in Lahamod Lahamid Mimunim al Hasha'arim, Shalo Yarviach, Kal Echad Masha Yirtse, She'ein lo La'adam Laharviach Ela Hashtos. So Beistin is obligated to appoint supervisors on the market prices, so that one person, or maybe more than one person, shouldn't try to take advantage and make a profit beyond a sixth. When you're a wholesaler and you just get rid of all your merchandise at one time, below Torah without great difficulty. But a retailer, hamocher ma'at ma'at, that sells individually, shomin lo tircho v'chol yitziyosav, umosar aleihem yarviach shtus. So over here, we already see that even Bizman Chazal, there were labor costs factored in, there were opportunity costs factored in, there were overhead costs factored in. They had these things as well. And so I think that the differences between then and now are less than some people might want to argue. But be that as it may, it says basically, I mean, I'm using the word wholesale. That was my characterization. I mean, you know, most retailers don't just dump all of their merchandise at one shot, as opposed to wholesalers, which at least it's much more mitzumtzum. Like they have a whole stock which they unload at a time. No, not necessarily all at once, but I'm saying compared to, yeah, right, exactly, yeah.
Move product much faster.
Yeah.
Move product much faster. They order enough to cover all their
I'm sorry? Yeah, so he's just talking, so these are just different types of business models. Okay. Okay, so depending on your business model, there's no uniform price. It's you're allowed to recoup, you're allowed to break even, and then you're allowed to profit a sixth. So we're talking about in a case where the price of whatever object we're talking about hasn't gone up. You're allowed to match that. Because of harama, and the Rama adds, Hani mili hecha de'ika be'dine de'parshi l'kul humochrin lizvuni hachi. So this limit is only when we have regulators. But if there's no enforcement, then you know the tmimus tikiyari shemayim, as Rav Ozner calls him, is not going to be able to is not going to be able to compete theoretically. Again, the economic argument for why he would not be able to compete is also interesting. He just might not profit as much, and he's assuming then that, according to Rav Ozner, what he's basically assuming is that if everybody else does it, the price is going to permanently go up, and so then you're not going to be able to afford to stay in business. If that's the case, then the shahr has just fundamentally gone up. So I'm not exactly sure where he's coming from, just from like a Metzius economic standpoint. But regardless, that's what the Rama says. The chishomu peiri didei, because when he finishes. Then he'll have to sell it with more. We don't make people lose out just for being nice guys. And he says, if people are mafkia, we can enforce it. And then he says, what are we talking about? So what are we talking about? We're only talking about cases that have to do with chaye nefesh, like wine, oil, and other staples. But sharin yanim, we let people profit as much as they want. That chiluk, Rashi says it as well. The Beis Yosef doesn't bring that down, but the Rashi does. The Rambam also brings it down, and the Magid Mishnah tries to figure out where the Rambam gets it from. He thinks he gets it from the next part of the sugya. Again, Rashi learned that way also. And then if you look in the Shulchan Aruch paskins that. So Rav Ozner, he takes this idea, and he says, so Pirish, im yesh echad yare shamayim, sherotza lasos kahalacha, velo lihistaker yoshter al shtus, v'yalpi masha mevor sham. So if you're following Chazal, you're only supposed to profit a sixth. And again, that doesn't mean it's uniform. You're allowed to break even to whatever you either spent or whatever opportunity cost you incurred, and addition to that, you're allowed to profit a sixth. The hashta, and then he says, and now iika miyuta yari shemayim shirotzim leisnai kein al pidin Torah, avol ein yicholin lamod bazeh ki yazlu peiroseim. You know, they'll lose all their peiros. Vatzadikim oela lo yimtzu od schora. They won't be able to find any more business. Az gam kein, gam heim ena michu yavim bekach. They're also not obligated. The kasva poskim, and the poskim say, the ma'iri the shar mochrim hamiyakrim hashar, that the people that are, I guess you could say, artificially raising the price of the market, heim goyim the lotzaisi lebedina, or goyim that don't care about what Beis Din says, dim heim yisraelim, because if they would be Jewish, aleim lishma ledas Torah, they should have to listen. Bim lotzaisi, oila hem bazeh. Ubavoseinu harabim, lo misnagin bazeh pi halacha afilu tovim shebanu. I really don't understand where he's coming from, just simply linking this to Onah, first of all. The Gemara there in Bava Basra, and again, it's very clear that it's not talking about Onah. It might be something that the profit limit of a sixth might be modeled after Onah, or maybe it comes from somewhere else. I don't know. Okay. But he says you're over on love de lo sona. But you're mixing up apples and oranges then.
He's only coming to rebut an argument from a different issue. If there would be fixed prices, and you would go try to be like you did Abraham, and if there's no fixed prices, then it can't be enough. He's telling you how he's mixing up two things, as a morality of aspiration and the deceit. He would like to see a world in which nothing is more than this, that should be the ideal margin of profit.
At least by Chaya Nefesh things.
In Chaya Nefesh, there was no attempt to regulate it. If you attempt to regulate the Chaya Nefesh, then you've got a
that's with regulation. There's no regulation in Worcestershire. This is the world you want to have, where somebody does regulate by method, and then you'd be terrible if you didn't. But in the world we live, it's not happening. So, how much would you live for?
Isn't where he agrees that just because one thing in a charm to follow the Rama, that you don't reason can't do anything we'll worry about it, we'll just think it's not business. The only thing is, oh no, we cannot violate Rama. We have to go to the we cannot violate Rama.
So then he's the Rama.
How can you compare the two?
No, there is no such. There is no such price based on what somebody comes and tells me the price. They're doing a fast charm. That's not the price. The price is the value. It's only charging what's the value.
But
they're violating or not. They're violating a fast charm.
Shar doesn't mean shovi. Shar means what people are paying.
Well, that's not how she would think.
When you find the shar views, by law from what you see, and every day there's a bus bill.
So that's sort of on one end of the spectrum, and then on the other end of the spectrum you have Rav Asher Weiss in Chelek Gimel Siman Kuf Zayin. So he basically sort of prefaces this whole discussion by saying he says that there's no concept of onos shtus at all. Basically says it's not applicable nowadays. And he says there's only some extreme cases. He says halacha lemaisa that the only times where it would happen is if it's if the prices are mamish regulated, or if there's real fraud going on, like mamish fraud. But otherwise, he says there's no concept of it. He has, I guess, two major arguments, and he tries to bring a bunch of rayas to each of them. His first major argument is that he believes that nowadays there's no shahr for basically anything unless it's regulated. So the way he sort of prefaces that is from Simin Reish Tes. So in the Torah, in Simin Reish Tes, there's a machlokas between the Beis Yosef and the Rama. So the Beis Yosef quotes the Rambam, the Rambam in Perek Chaf Aleph, the beginning of Perek Chaf Aleph in Hilchos Mechira, he says, Hamocher min yodua, afo pisha kamos eino yodua, mekho kayam, v'yesh lahem onok, fishar bashuk. So this is based on, this is from the Rambam, and the Rambam paskins that if you sell something, if you sell something that you know what it is, even if you don't know the quantity of it, the mekach is kayam, just that it triggers ona based on whatever the price is in the shuk. The Beis Yosef, though, asks Akasha on the Rambam, from a Gemara in Bav Mitzia and Samach Dalet Amid Aleph, which talks about where you do some type of, futures business venture about goat's milk. Whatever, I'm going to sell you a price now for whatever the goat's milk will be produced over a certain period of time. Or whatever wool I'll shear, or whatever wool the sheep will produce that we'll shear. All these different cases, mutter. So there, the Gemara says, mutter, which means that's not a problem of, getting into ribbis territory. And it says, and so the implication is, though, not only that it's mutter mitzad ribbis, it's also mutter mitzad other things too, i.e. ona, umashma dekana af b'mecher yoser al demehan. And so the Beis Yosef asks, well, then that's mashma, that there's no difference between whether it's the shir of ona or not. You get to keep whatever it is. So that seems to be Soser what the Rambam paskind in Hilchos Mechira. So he answers, V'shema lo kasuv kein harambam elo bedavar sheyesh lo shar kavua kimochitim ukayotze. So maybe the Rambam only said his din when there's a shar kavua, like by wheat or something similar. Avol chalav v'giza, but milk and wool, or wool shearings, she'ein lahem shar yadua, that do not have a known shar, el kol echad kona kefi shechafetz, but rather everybody buys based on what they want, leis be'ona. In the Kesef Mishnah, he doesn't have that explanation. He doesn't have that last part of el kol echad kona kefi shechafetz, part, and he ends off of Vitzarech Iyun as opposed to prefacing it with Vishema. I don't know if that reflects a change in Beis Yosef's thinking or not. I wonder, but I don't really have a convincing argument either way. Lemaisa, though, if you take it all together, the Beis Yosef says that there is a difference between something that has a known fixed price and something that does not. Now, why chalav and giza aren't is a little bit difficult to understand. He says it doesn't have a shar yadua, but instead everybody just buys it for whatever they want. Well, it doesn't mean you get it for free if you want. It doesn't mean you pay what you want. It means something else. I'm sorry? Well, he's not talking about... So you're saying that chalav and giza don't refer to the industries of milk and wool, but specifically this scenario of futures. He says, "I'll call echad kona kefi shechafetz."
Maybe it's
changed that way. Once upon a time, there was something that was fairly sharp, particularly for my shoes. Uh-huh. Okay. The way Rav Asher Weiss explains it, he seems to be saying that it's more about that it wasn't sold in markets, but rather he thinks that just people, it was more of like a Hamish arrangement that you just went and said, could I buy a... So you could touch up what the Beis Yosef is saying is that it's specifically a futures market where there is no fixed price, and people just essentially pay whatever they feel like paying or whatever it's worth to them personally, but there is no actual market for it. The Ramah, in the Darkei Moshe, though, he argues and says, well, no, you could just check how much it is in the market. You could go down to Main Street and see how much milk costs or how much wool costs. So... especially if you're learning that way, they just seem to be talking at each other. But the whole concept of a futures market is because there's a certain amount of risk involved, right? But according to the there's no market for risk on Main Street. But if you say that, then the entire futures market exists and is regular. I mean, the moment you say I could go down, so then you've fallen into the Rama's trap. So if I could go down and check, so then it's not kefi mashechafetz. So then, what's the chiluk of whether it's bala olam or not?
Difference is that if it is a regular market, it has an established price. But if it's
some reason this is the title.
But risk could also have an established price. Futures could also have an established price. So what's the so then what's the chiluk? But then the risk associated with it is also different. My risk tolerance is also different. So 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 according to Rebbe, the machlokas between the Ramah and the Beis Yosef is the machlokas and metzius of how we define risk or
there's no market because it's not regularly, it's never happened. The corner of Usher, this happens once in a blue moon. People don't have a market. This is what he learns. They still don't need a market. The market's a lot of people, a lot of time. Shuma can be done one time randomly. What's going to happen to your cow today? Nobody knows. We've never done this before. It happened once in a blue moon, but it's fine. That's a Shuma. That's the Ramah says that's enough because we can have to talk about a Shuma. If they does it, who cares? A Shuma is a market. That's what I believe the Usher learned from their words, what they're arguing. All right, well, go ahead.
So I hadn't thought that the Ramah was talking about futures markets. I thought that they were having either a machlokas about the mitzias about whether this commodity was traded, like Rav Asher Weiss was saying, or that they had different conceptions of what the shahr is, meaning the Beis Yosef just thinks that it's about futures or risk in general, and the Ramah says, no, we're talking about the actual chayfetz, and so you got to go down and go down to the market. And the moment you can evaluate that, that's what onah is, or that's where you would calculate onah. I don't know.
It's the difference between a recognized commodity like now that they have precious metals commodity as opposed to electric vehicles. Because we don't really know how electric vehicles are going to play out in the next 5 to 10 years. And so is that example? I'm just saying that. So, but the precious metals has been a commodity market for a number of years. You have to, do you like that it's somewhere else, or do you have to?
Okay, so be that as it may, the Ramah and the Beis, the Ramah disagrees with the Beis Yosef and the Bach, the Shach, the Nesivis all paskin like the Ramah. So as I said before, Rav Asher Weiss seems to take it in a way that people basically misunderstood the Beis Yosef. What the Beis Yosef meant was that there's basically. His language. That there is ono when even if there's no shar, the chol musuga shar lo matzinu ela bit totzeres chaklid hakluya beona misuyemet shabahi mitzuya bishvakim uba matzinu musug yatsa hashar. So a price is defined as by a specific place in time. The vanas of Beis Yosef derak davar sheyesh bo mechir misuyam. So it has to have a specific price. But there are some things that for various reasons, in this case, Rav Asher posits because it was so, such a hamish market, because it didn't happen so often. What it means is that you're basically buying something that is not really sold. It doesn't have a price. And so that is considered, there's no concept of onah if there's no price.
I know it's the same thing. I know we say car coin or with our coin. Anyway, I've heard there's some communities that are so desirable, people never list their home in realtors anyway. All homes are sold, owned by word of mouth, and by the time you get there to ask, it's already sold. And that's the kind of phenomenon you're referring to.
No, I think it's almost the opposite. Meaning, it's that these things are.
I invented the widget. I want to sell
it. Yeah, or like. I mean, if it doesn't exist on the market, so you just make up prices. So that's not a shahr. So with this idea, Rav Asher Weiss wants to answer the question of the Machna Ephraim. So the Machna Ephraim asks from another Gemara, and also Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, that Beis Yosef obviously knew, from in Reish Chav Zayin Sif Tesvav, that there is Onah by Svarim, even though there's a mandamer in the Gemara that says that there is no Onah by Svarim because... there's a different language in the Tosefta versus the Gemara itself. I think the Tosefta is a little bit clearer. It's in Perek Gimel, Halacha Yud Gimel in Tosefta. This is Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Sefer Torah, Behemo, Margolios, Ein Lehem, Ona. Why? Sefer Torah, Nesha, Ein Lo Damen. Because it has no value. The language of the Gemara, it's Ein Kates Damen. So those have different connotations, but again, if you put them together, what it's basically saying is that it has no value, or it has no market, because theoretically it's infinite. So the Machne Ephraim asks, well, I'm sorry?
Or unique,
or special. I mean, like a Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah isn't unique. Meaning because of the quality? I'm just quoting what I see over here. So, like the in the Minchas Bikurim over here, they say Shein Lo Damim Kol Chafatzecha Lo Yishavu Ba. You know, he's being hyperbolic, but I thought it was be. Okay, I thought it was just because religion, you know, Judaica, for lack of a better term, are special to me. If I need it, I want it. How could you put a price on it? The same thing is. I mean, that's what the what's it called? Shuvah is that. But again, you can make the same argument about Behema and Margolios, that it depends on. I mean, no. Meaning in the Gemara and the Tosefta, where they're coming from, their rationale is that all these things are similar, just for different reasons, but they have a similar quality in that you can make a very convincing argument that they could have infinite value or infinite utility in some way to you. Okay. So the way that Rav Asher Weiss answers the question is that these things have a shahr. It's just that you can make a convincing argument that there are exceptions to that shahr depending on your personal set of circumstances or your disposition. So there's onah for that according to the way we paskin. But something that mamish has no shahr at all, so then that could be theoretically different. With this idea in mind, that something that has no shahr is mufka from onah, or onah doesn't apply. This is even though we don't paskin like the Beis Yosef, you could say Kimli like the Beis Yosef, and then he quotes the. He quotes the Beis Yitzchak, who also talks about this in a theoretical case about esrogim. Zani Astaiti, I'm not sure where he's coming from for a couple of reasons. I think Rabbi Sultan for talking me through, talking this through with me. The first thing is that the whole concept of Kimli is usually post facto. It's that when there's a muchzuk and I go to Beis Din, I can claim something, but it doesn't allow me to do it l'chadchila. And there's also an isser here. There's also an Isser involved over here. And even the Beis Yitzchak, the language of the Beis Yitzchak, if you look at in the case, he's talking about afterwards. So I'm not 100% sure where he's coming from. Just to be malamed tzchus, based on what I said earlier, that you're using the concept that the pasuk formulated it not as a maisa per se, but a maisa that has sort of repercussions of ona, either physical, psychological, financial, whatever it is. So any case where I can make the argument that there is no pressure applied based on whatever argument I want to provide, so then I didn't oppress you. So if theoretically this guy would take me to Beis Din and I would present my case and they would say, okay, Kimli, so I didn't oppress you. So then theoretically, l'chadchila, since the Torah didn't aser, me overcharging you, it asered me oppressing you. So if I can make the argument in court that I'm not oppressing you, so I didn't oppress you. Again, I'm trying to be malamed tzchus. I don't know if, it doesn't sound like he's convinced.
Go ahead.
I don't know. Yes. Yeah. So then the next sort of raya that he marshals is a tshuva of the tshuva of the Rosh. The Machane Ephraim quotes it. It's a slightly different nusach. But if you look at the Rosh in the tshuva, it seems like he's talking about the you have like a government or city municipality monopoly of some particular industry, where the payout is variable and you're essentially just paying for the right to do whatever service it is. So the Rush says, Omer ani de lo shaycha ona ela b'chafetz shadam of yiduim. I'm not sure what what language that is. Shel hakal lo shaycha ona al meona mishtanis lifi hazman. He says because the price continuously fluctuates, so we throw our hands up and there's no ona just definitionally. Rav Asher Weiss uses that as a proof to say that something that has no fixed price. Yes, but I guess you could buy the monopoly rights. Right, okay.
We regulate retail. Once upon a time, you bought the right to sell it. They gave us the back of
it.
I don't know what the government did, but more or less,
well, now
it was a bribe.
Right.
You and the birds.
Yeah. So Rav Asher Weiss wants to extend this to the market in general, which I don't know if that's so accurate. His argument is ulagabe dvarim rabim bechakala hamadernit ein musag mugdar shel mechir. There is no set price. Prices constantly fluctuate. Lefi aitza v'habikush, based on supply and demand. And then he says there are other factors at work too, based on what we said before, in terms of other expenses, overhead, opportunity cost, etc. But that point that Rav Asher Weiss, and again, I think that's sort of the linchpin for this, he's basically saying that even that whether you say Kimli or whether you hold like the Rush, whatever you want to say, it's all predicated on the notion that nowadays you believe there is no shar. I don't know if that's necessary. I don't think that's true. Like, their price variation doesn't mean that there's no shar. It just means that there's a bigger range because we have complicated business system models and because everybody charges different things. But that's not, it's not that there's no shar. Like, we would still raise our eyebrows if somebody jacked up the price.
I can't get rid of those spam emails. And there's a winter coat for $8. A winter coat doesn't cost $8. And I assume it must be stolen. But
so that's what I think. That there is a shar, it's just there's a range. So now that we've kind of taken care of the extremes, okay, so now that we have
to the range and B, the shard is the shot. For a lot of different reasons, including supply.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
So the 2 points you cover, you have to go to
right, yes. Again, I think some industries do fluctuate very rapidly, but the average I don't think does. So once we're talking about a range, so now the question is, okay, what does that mean then? How do you calculate a shtus? So that's sort of his second point, which is, you know, you could sort of have three possibilities. You could have the high end, the low end, or some sort of middle average or rove, depending on how you want to make the argument. So the Erech Shai believes that it's the lowest value, that believes that it's the lowest, the floor, which he says, I don't know basically where he gets it from, and so therefore he's wrong, it doesn't make sense. If you look in the Erech Shai, he proves it from other Gemaras, but he basically says that he assumes that the lowest price reflects, the Gemara doesn't say this explicitly, the Erech Shai's analysis is that the lowest price that people are willing to buy and sell it at reflects its true value or reflects the shahr's value, and everything else is just premium. I don't think that that is correct. The second is to say that it's, you know, just the most. Or the third is sort of a range. And that's what Rav Asher, that it's the middle. Again, whether it's, you know, mean, median, rove, weighted average, that's a little bit ambiguous. But Rav Asher Weiss says that there is a fixed value if we would work hard enough, and it's the middle. He says he brings a raya because of Shaman Esakarkos, that if you have to pay something, you take the middle opinion of the appraisers. I don't think that's comparable to here, because over there. It depends who you ask. The case over there where it's talking about appraising land, you're talking about a specific piece of karka as opposed to here where you're trying to evaluate a market. That's a very different rationale. If you ask me personally, I think it's a range, meaning the entire range represents the shahr. So if it's a sixth more than the extreme, and again, it doesn't have to be a fixed price, meaning we're not going to do necessarily a poll or data collect, because even if we would have all the data, it's yitachen that if somebody would charge a couple cents more, that would also be within that spectrum. So it's almost impossible to calculate the shtus. And so I still think it's nogeya bizman hazeh, and so you'd have to do this sort of litmus test where, like, if everybody would have full knowledge of the price and what you're actually charging, your eyebrows would go up. And so if your eyebrows would go up in either direction of, wow, this is really cheap, or wow, this is really expensive, so you've crossed the threshold. I think actually calculating this is very difficult, I said it, because even if you have all the data, because we've acknowledged that we're dealing with the range, there might be a price that people are actually willing to pay, either higher or lower than the extremes that currently exist that are still part of the shahr. It's just that nobody opens up a store that actually charges that. Yes, I acknowledge that it is. But I think once you're acknowledging that the shahr is not based on, you know, specific, you know, data points, so.
You tell me because if
Well, supply and demand is abstract. Supply and demand doesn't mean that, oh, there's a store that actually charges it. Meaning we believe that supply and demand only actualize in the long term. It could just be that right now, this guy, because of, I don't know, price stickiness or because of inventory, this specific vendor hasn't updated his prices to reflect the real equilibrium of where supply and demand reach. So
if I want to know
supply demand doesn't mean, for our purposes of creating a shahr, it doesn't mean that the imaginary supply demand potential price is the shahr.
No, I'm saying the supply and demand exist in people's minds. It's just there's no store that charges that. I mean, but that's still the shahr in people's minds.
Supply and demand is the average.
it gives you the average in the long, it gives you the average in the long term. But how do I know that today it reflects the shahr today?
Charles Osgood had an editor a couple years ago. He said, Charles Osgood, he's a news commentator. He says, one day he lives in Englewood Cliffs. So he's driving across the GWB. He hears that OPEC raised the prices. So he pulls to the first gas station, sees it coming out with a magic marker and increases the price, you know, up north. But then a few weeks later, OPEC drops the prices. And the price, and he says, I think you hear an announcement. Oh, we have to wait for the shipping cart. He says, the price didn't go up up north. The price will come back down until.
Okay, and then the final point that Rav Asher Weiss makes is about mechila. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia, it has machlokas Rav Shmuel about how to structure a tanai about she'en lecha ona and how that works. The way Shmuel, which we ostensibly paskin like, unless we don't, depending on is this iser, is it mammon. But the way we seem to paskin is that if you say stam, that almanas, that we don't have ona, so then that doesn't work. But if you're mefaresh, then it's okay. There are no issues of ona. It's machlokas rishonim as to what that means. I guess on one end you have the Rambam where he says you mamish have to stipulate the premium, where you have to say this is what it's actually worth and this is what I'm charging you. Assuming the guy can do math, so you know. And if you say afal pi kein, so the sale goes through. And there's no issue of ona because you're not oppressing them. As opposed to if you don't say that, then that's not called actual mechila. Why that's not called mechila, there's different pshatim as to why that's not mechila, either because it's not katsuv or maybe it's something else. There's different pshatim. Rashi, though, has a more expansive shita. He says that mefaresh just means you have to say there is ona going on right now. You don't need to know the premium of it, but as long as you know that there is, so that's enough. As opposed to stam is just where you basically are signing this, you know, liability waiver, basically saying I don't care. Maybe there's ona, maybe there's not ona, whatever happens. So Rav Asher Weiss says that he thinks that bizman hazeh there is implicit mechila for everybody whenever they go into the market saying I know there's ona. Again, I'm assuming not the Rambam. I'm assuming he's not holding like the Rambam, because then you would need to know the premiums, unless you want to make the argument that there's like an even bigger type of mechila that could go on where you basically say I don't care what any premiums are ever. I don't care about premiums, but I think that's going too far. So assuming that you hold like Rashi, there is this implicit mechila. And yet he acknowledges and says, but how is that different than stam? Meaning, how can you say implicit mechila if you don't know? Maybe there's taka no ona going on right now. So either you make the assumption that there's always ona going on, like Rav Osner, or what Rav Asher Weiss suggests is he has an example over here. He quotes also from Reish Chav Zayin and Sif Chav Gimel that a balabayas who sells his own personal effects, who sells his own kelim, ain bo din ona shakol yaduim shadarko lahalos b'mechir. Everybody knows that this guy overcharges, and that's enough. And so, and he quotes the Ksos. The Ksos says that it's ki'ilu hisna, that there's ki'ilu atnai, even though you didn't verbalize anything, it's ki'ilu mefarish because the circumstances are mefarish. And so he says that that occurs anywhere nowadays in the current market. Well, I mean, like you said, just like in an average store, there's implicit mechila, which again, lani estaiti, I don't think that exists. Meaning if I knew someone was overcharging me, I wouldn't go in. And when I'm willing to pay more, even though I know that it costs more, there's a reason why. Assuming people are rational, there's a reason why. So I wouldn't structure that as mechila. I would just structure that we have a wider tolerance of what we're willing to pay for various reasons. So I don't think that the mechila part works. And so once again, I think it's a range. And if you go beyond that range in a significant way, whether the range is bounded by actual data or abstract data, I, you know, agree that that's a chiddush. Once you stray beyond that, a sixth, that would be ona. Okay.
I'm curious whether does anyone hold anywhere that because of the really what's going on with all of Onah is an information imbalance, and that the purchaser and seller at the time of the deal doesn't know that they're losing. But today we would say it's completely yeshar levure. It's a rare case in which you don't have the ability, and that's the mechila. You can't come back later and try and undo the deal or claim back your sixth on the claim that you didn't realize that the price wasn't accurate. Sorry, that's we say your mocha because you could have you knew or you should have known.
Right.
He said today I should give a cover. It's approximately 15 minutes. He said make a couple of phone calls, we'll Google it and find out. So he said that's the time limit. I mean, I don't know if that's real.
I mean, I hate to like try and darshan the word myself, but the whole word of Onah involves some sort of taking advantage of. That's the point. The point is taking advantage of someone. And today, if you're, you know, I'm not talking about a Rolex or a diamond ring, where I think it is still probably shy to say there's an overcharging because you're not sufficiently able to know what the market is for this very rare watch, or even just a very expensive watch or an expensive diamond or something unique. But for your average Amazon item, to take someone, I mean, just in the theoretical case, to take someone to Basin and you want to undo the transaction. I don't even know that we should hear such a claim. Just saying it's great. You paid the market price by virtue of voluntarily entering into the transaction, and in a competitive marketplace where you could have easily checked all of the prices.
You're telling me I have an obligation to get on the internet and to check the prices.
Yeah, I
don't think I can do it.
The moment I walk out of the room, I get my phone and check my internet.
Whatever. Don't.
I haven't seen people explicit. So there you get into the Aruch HaShulchan's first diuk in the Rush. I didn't say this, but the Aruch HaShulchan makes a number of diukim from the Rush. The first diuk that he makes is that the Rush really leans into the information asymmetry or the malintent. And so the Aruch HaShulchan says, what we can infer from here then is that if we're dealing with a very, very common product that is also has a very, very limited sort of financial spread, so then there's no Onah on that because you know. So just as an example, so if milk, the variation in milk across the entire...
You can't remember. Once upon a time, when Coca-Cola was the Pepsi or Coke, and they were selling it Pepsi-Cola, when for a nickel you get a lot, Pepsi, nickel, that was how the jingle went, something rhymed there, but it was, the shower was on the radio, under those circumstances, even to tell me that I spent more
right.
than the jingle, and I'm saying you think you're right, that is itself a
right.
I know what the shower is. You try to fool me. I could have gone to find out the shower. I didn't pick up silver. You took advantage of it. They don't have a radio. The people didn't have radio.
Well, right. So that's a Matthias thing. But the Aruch HaShulchan believes that if there's basically no way that you could not have known if it's obvious that everybody knows the price and you FLP can decided not to, so then that's. Then that would be different. That would have implied mechila. But I don't know if that's. I don't think that level exists for many things. No, he also says the other. He also says the other side, though.
When you have a regulated price on milk, he says, then you pop a mishdor.
Right. If I'm doing it, meaning if there's malintent, and the other, or not. Sorry, not. Right. If I don't know.
No, we're not. They both know and they both don't know.
We'll take a look after. I'm sorry. So just to sort of finish up on that last point, in Rabbi Aaron Levine's Zichrono Levracha, so he, in one of the Jewish law journals from Hebrew University, I think in 03 or something, he published a whole long thing on Onah, trying to give a lot of economic theory into different sheets, which is really interesting. I don't know how lamito it is in certain cases, but it's very interesting. But one thing which he just says sort of matter-of-factly, which I think you have to accept, is that Chazal did not expect everybody to do the fullest extent of price shopping before you buy something or before you sell something. And that's what the laws of Onah are here to protect, that you have, you're not expected to do all your the fullest extent of due diligence possible before a transaction occurs.
You're probably right. The Yorker Shulchan, I think, is telling you something that I don't know if it's possible even today, but when you were dealing with the Coca-Cola, whatever it is, his sponsor, if we get a lot, I don't think that there was movement that everybody knew that. Now, if the person knows in the Sol Rav Akiva, obviously the Sol Rav Akiva not bring 80% through the Sol Rav Akiva.
Right.
But there were enough people who didn't listen to it. Not in those days, there were enough people who didn't have radio.
Right.
Didn't have radio, didn't know. I don't know if there's some apologies here. But the prophet was telling you that if a woman goes to the store today to buy a quart of milk, she knows what the quart of milk costs. She always goes to the store. She's already done the thousand pounds. I mean, tell me everybody has already done the internet search.
Maybe it's more lively now. I mean, you said one time I went radios, but I think I read somewhere that 96% of the homes today, no matter how financially strapped they are, have internet access.
Yeah, but just because you have internet access, it doesn't mean, like, I personally price shop for certain things. Like, I just bought a bike, so I'm going to price shop to make sure I get a good deal on a bike. Right, but if it's for, like, a quart of milk, so, you know, I'm not going to calculate the spread.
I could see what costs in New York, I will, but that doesn't tell you what costs in the city or the neighborhood.
No, I'm good. I don't want, I've subjected people to enough already. Okay, fine. So the last point, and again, this is just sort of parenthetical, is in terms of determining the scope of the shahr, I don't think you have to include the whole world. It's just whatever concentric circles you operate in. Meaning, if you're dealing with something that theoretically could be purchased on Amazon or, you know, brought in from China, but most people don't do that and instead choose to purchase it, you know, just from their local supermarket or from their local store, I don't know if you would need to factor that in. So just again, as an example, I'm sorry. Meaning a different shahr for sort of international.
From 47th Street. 47th Street has its own shahr. And only insiders know what the shahr is.
But theoretically, you could say that, you know, if I live here, most people don't go to 47th Street, but some do. So do I have to take them into account?
But whatever it is.
Right.
That's
okay. Okay. Right. Okay.
Okay.
So.
Next week, we cover the
couple of cemeteries. No, because of the behavior of the sort of merchants. That's what he told me about.
Okay.
Okay. Next week, I would like to go over on Thursday.